Sure. My name is Anthony Weyer, and I'm the Legislative Secretary for Nuclear Disarmament and Pentagon Spending at the Friends Committee on National Legislation.
And can you talk a little bit more about what the Friends Committee is for those that aren't aware?
Absolutely. The Friends Committee on National Legislation is a Quaker-based lobby working in the public interest. We've been at this work for over 75 years, and we were actually founded not far from here in Richmond, Indiana.
Just a side note, I actually am a graduate of Earlham College.
Aha.
Yeah, so pretty familiar with the Quaker tradition and
great,
all of that.
Great. And we work across a range of issues on both the domestic side. So we work on immigration, on criminal justice, on human needs, and then we work on foreign policy as well. So not just nuclear disarmament and Pentagon spending, but also stopping endless war, as well as various issues in the Middle East.
Can you tell me a little bit about what your talk, it was the myth of usable nuclear weapons, and usable is in quotes, and why is that a myth, or what is that myth?
Sure. One main focus of my talk on Sunday was exactly this myth that if we build a new nuclear warhead for the Navy's submarine-launched ballistic missiles, which the Trump administration has proposed and Congress has provided money for, and now the only question is whether we, in fact, deploy those new nuclear warheads. The myth is that this would somehow give the president a new option to fight and perhaps win a nuclear war. And I wanted to show just how destructive and dangerous this weapon is, and how important it is for voters to contact their members of Congress and ask them to stop it before it's too late.
And when we're talking about these nuclear weapons, they're quote-unquote smaller
than
Hiroshima or Nagasaki.
Correct. Well, so let me just kind of walk through and give you some sense of what a nuclear weapon is versus what a normal explosion. So if people remember the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing, the Ryder truck that destroyed a federal building and killed 168 people, that bomb used the explosive power of about 2 tons of TNT. Sometimes you may have heard of this, you may remember this thing called the mother of all bombs. This was a large conventional bomb that was used in Afghanistan in 2017. To give you a sense of that bomb's power, that you had the explosive force of about 11 tons of TNT. This new warhead that is supposedly low-yield nuclear warhead would deliver the explosive power of about 5,000 tons of TNT. The bomb that was dropped in Hiroshima in 1945 delivered the power of about 15,000 tons of TNT, so about a third or so in comparison to that first nuclear bomb that was used in war. And average sort of modern nuclear warhead that the United States has in its arsenal could carry the explosive power of around 150,000 tons of TNT up to something as big as 300,000 tons of TNT. And in fact, now there's still a bomb in the U.S. arsenal, kind of a holdover from the Cold War, that goes over 1 million tons of TNT equivalent.
So your position and the American Friends Service Committee's position.
Sorry, Friends Committee on National Legislation.
Friends Committee on National Legislation. Your position and your organization's position is that there is no place for nuclear weapons. Is that misstating?
No, that's exactly right. So we have long, basically from September of 1945, we've been working towards nuclear disarmament and a world free of nuclear weapons. I will say I'm proud to work in an organization that works on not just the prophetic, but the practical. We really are focused on what we can do today to make things better. And that's why we're focused on this particular warhead. We don't have to, eliminate all nuclear weapons to make sure we don't make things worse by building one new warhead that we don't need. And frankly, its only purpose is to let the president think that he has a new option for fighting a nuclear war. I don't think this president or any president, frankly, needs additional options for thinking that they could actually fight a nuclear war.
And the Friends Committee on National Legislation, who do you find yourself up against when you're trying to advocate for no additional nuclear weapons?
I would say actually the biggest battle we face is kind of inertia and thoughtlessness. That that often, if the military or the executive branch proposes something to Congress, in most cases, unless there's a really strong pressure from members of Congress's constituents, more often than not, their inclination is to go along. It sounds fine, okay, I guess that you say we need it, then here you go. And so really our biggest battle right now is kind of, like I say, just inertia and kind of the lack of real thought and feeling, because the truth is, all too often members of Congress don't really hear from their constituents about their concerns about nuclear weapons.
And nuclear weapons, combating that inertia, essentially, nuclear weapons are something that feels so far removed from day-to-day life. I have never had any experience with a nuclear weapon. I don't know if you have or not, but how do you convince somebody to care about an eventuality like building more nuclear weapons?
That's a great question, and it's really a big part of our day-to-day work. You know, the former Speaker of the House, Tip O'Neill, famously said that all politics is local. I'd offer that all nuclear war is local, that the reality is that the people who would suffer if that event ever happened is not the deciders in Washington. It's the people who live here in Bloomington or, you know, near the Crane factory or somewhere else out in the country, right? So it really is about the people and the citizens kind of taking back ownership and demanding that their elected representatives in Congress, first of all, don't defer to the president on decisions that are this important. Don't just assign to the president, this president or any president, this decision. I mean, I don't care if your views are, if your concern is about Donald Trump, then you should be concerned about deferring to him. But frankly, there are plenty of people who would be concerned about deferring to Hillary Clinton or to Bernie Sanders and letting those people make the decisions that matter most in their lives. And so either way, it's really about the people saying to their elected representatives, I want you to think about this more. I want you to take more care because this doesn't make sense. This doesn't sit right with me. And I expect that the people who are acting on my behalf in Washington make better decisions than what they're making right now.
When we're talking about use of a nuclear weapon and how that may impact people, like, for example, right here in Bloomington, what is the impact of the use of even a quote-unquote small nuclear weapon like the 5,000-ton that you had mentioned is being proposed in Congress?
Right. It really is hard to wrap your brain around how awful a single nuclear weapon would be in a populated area. And so for me, one of the things I try to do is kind of connect it back to something that does feel real. So I mentioned earlier the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing. It's still kind of something that we can see in our mind's eye of what that federal building looked like, what that explosion looked like. And so if you take just the explosive power element of that bomb,
which you had mentioned was 2 tons.
2 tons, correct. And you begin to plot that on a map in any place in the country, say here in Bloomington, and kind of it takes about 330 or so of those Oklahoma City bombs to cover the area that would be covered by just one of the so-called low yield, just the 5,000 ton weapon I'm talking about. And that's just the immediate explosive catastrophe at the moment. Nuclear weapons, of course, are not just explosive bombs. They also generate large amounts of fission products, of radiation products. They generate massive amounts of heat that would cause burns on anyone that's exposed and would also set any sort of exposed flammable material afire and likely set up a kind of fireball effect inside wherever it happened. It would, of course, however close it was to the ground, one of the things the energy does is go into the ground and kind of evaporate and then elevate all the suddenly radiation-laced dust and particles. And so you can imagine, say, think about in your mind the clouds of dust and particles coming out of the World Trade Center in 2001 and kind of that cloud that drifted up Manhattan and across around New York. And then imagine all of that is laced with all sorts of radioactive material. And so wherever it's going to come down is going to suddenly be a new radiation hazard that people are exposed to. This is the so-called fallout that you'll remember from the, you know, from the history books. And so it really is hard to describe just how catastrophic one of these things would be. Now, when I talk to people in Washington, a lot of times the kind of answer is, well, better them than us in that reaction. And I guess I would turn it around and say, you know, what do you think the world is going to think about the United States and being sort of on our side anymore when they actually see us so kind of casually and cavalierly use such awesome destructive power? It will be one of the greatest kind of strategic foreign policy disasters we could ever have, leaving aside, if you can and I can't, the moral disaster. It would be the humanitarian calamity that it would unleash. And so for me, it's kind of a moral but also a rational imperative to make it less likely, to kind of move ourselves away from the precipice of this catastrophic event wherever possible.
And this is just talking about one nuclear weapon.
Correct.
Right? And in theory, you have nuclear armed states like India and Pakistan, which we just recently saw in Kashmir, instabilities and problems with instability in Kashmir. And one of the arguments, at least the argument that I think most listeners would be familiar with, is the mutually assured destructive argument, where it's fairly likely if a nuclear weapon is used that there will be some sort of retaliation. Mm-hmm. Does that factor into the arithmetic of this new strategic, quote unquote, nuclear weapon that's being proposed?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no question that the people who are advocating more new types or different types of nuclear weapons genuinely feel that they are doing the right thing for American national security, because the theory is we have to convince the other side that we would be prepared and have the capacity to retaliate if they use nuclear weapons against us. To be honest with you, I've worked on these issues for two decades, and I spend a lot less time arguing about whether we need to go from one nuclear weapon down to the zero nuclear weapon, because so much of the debate really is about, well, do we need 2,500 or do we need 2,501? So the United States is currently party to a treaty with Russia that does limit both sides' total nuclear warhead. I should say not their total nuclear weapons, but the ones they have available to be launched on missiles and bombers that can reach each other. And when I was part of the team in 2010 that got that treaty through the Senate, working for John Kerry at the time on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And we had a lot of debates about whether it would somehow leave the United States vulnerable. And one of the things that I really try to explain to people is this treaty allows us to have something like, 2,000 or so nuclear warheads that could be delivered in, you know, less than an hour to Russia at any time. And so if you are arguing seriously that that's not enough, what in the world are you going, what's your plan for nuclear weapon number 2001? Like, what actual thing is, what actual problem is that going to solve that couldn't be solved with 2,000 of these? When you go back and think of the math I was just talking about of what just one small one would do, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, the reality is we got caught in a disastrous, expensive, dangerous Cold War with the Soviet Union, where both sides had upwards of 20 to 30,000 of these things. And it's taken years kind of to unwind even that madness just to get us to the level of 2 to 3,000 on each side. You mentioned India and Pakistan. Their total arsenals are a tiny fraction of what the United States has. The United States, the only comparable country in terms of numbers of these destructive weapons, is Russia. Everyone else is not quite rounding error within those two stockpiles, but it is extremely low, right? Basically, our numbers are measured in the thousands. Everyone else is measured at most in the hundreds. And say in the case of North Korea, it's at most in the tens right now.
In Indiana, we have kind of a legacy with former Senator Richard Lugar, who was kind of instrumental in that buyback program after the fall of the Soviet Union. Where do you see some hope or some glimmer of, is there anybody who you think is really on the right side of this issue on Capitol Hill who is actively pushing for limiting both size of nuclear weapons and the size of arsenals?
Sure. Well, first of all, I should say, I mentioned that I worked on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. I was very fortunate to work with Senator Lugar because he was the lead Republican on that committee at the time I worked. And it was Senator Lugar and his leadership more than anyone else that actually secured the passage of this treaty in 2010, working alongside John Kerry. It was exactly the kind of bipartisan collaboration that we often hear we're supposed to want. And the reality is he did exactly the right thing, and the truth is it kind of imperiled him in his electoral prospects later on. Today we have exciting new prospects. The new chairman of the House Armed Services Committee is a man named Adam Smith. He represents the Seattle area. But he's been very explicit in questioning sort of the path we're taking on not just proposing these new nuclear weapons, but also spending as much as well over $1 trillion over the coming 30 years to essentially refresh and overhaul every aspect of the kind of remnant of our Cold War arsenal. So this means building a new missile to go into silos in the northern plains that carry ballistic missiles. This means building a whole new round of ballistic missile submarines that will patrol the navy, patrol the oceans, and ready to launch at a moment's notice. This means building an entirely new nuclear capable bomber, and all the kind of armaments that go with this. And Adam Smith, among others, has led a charge to really begin questioning these things. In the Senate, there remain a few members of the Senate who that treaty was passed in 2010. It's kind of remarkable. It's not even done yet. It's a 10-year treaty, and fewer than half of the senators who voted for it in 2010 are still in the Senate today. That just gives you an idea of how much change has happened. And so a big part of the challenge we face is getting constituents and voters to tell these new members of Congress who haven't been thinking about nuclear weapons policy that much that it really does matter. It's on their list. That's not to say that you can't kind of take out climate change. You can't take out immigration policy. You can't take out criminal justice or advocacy for women and control over their bodies and remove all of those things. I guess I would argue that if you care about women, for instance, having control of their bodies, then you should care about men mostly who have the power to make decisions to unleash destruction that would destroy those bodies in the form of nuclear weapons. That if you care about the rights of people of color, you should care about a lot of men who mostly look like me, that is white, who are making decisions in Washington about unleashing this destructive power. If you care about the climate, then you should be deeply concerned also about a architecture of weaponry that, if used, would unleash a dramatic climatic catastrophe that would almost certainly result in the deaths of billions of people around the world just because of the debris and dust and global cooling that would result from the kind of nuclear winter type scenario that we would see. And so I see kind of nuclear weapons as intersecting with a lot of these other issues as an important manifestation of kind of all that you, maybe many of your listeners, have felt frustrated about in the past with our, you know, the way power is used and wielded. And nuclear weapons are a perfectly bad example. You know, if you care about gun violence and the ability of one person to kind of make a decision about another person's life with a handgun, think about the destruction that can be wrought by one person right now, namely the president, with a nuclear weapon that can destroy, you know, millions of lives in an instant.
Anthony Weyer, anything else that we haven't gotten to or anything else that you think is important for our listeners to know or commonly misunderstood about nuclear weapons and their use?
Sure. I think the most important thing your listeners need to know is that what moves Washington action is voters and the people here. And I've seen it time and time again that in working in Washington, that it really is the case that the silence of voters on an issue, it speaks volumes. It is heard very loud in Washington. And so at the same time, when you are raising a concern, when you are lifting it up, when you are making clear that there are real political stakes attached in your own personal voting decisions based on the policy prescriptions that a member of Congress or a candidate would offer, that speaks volumes. And you will be always surprised, and yet you should feel very empowered every single time about just how valuable raising your voice, going into your member of Congress and saying, I'm concerned about this. I want to hear why I'm wrong, because I think I'm right. And that's a good place to put a member of Congress in. They don't ever want to tell you that you're wrong. And the truth of the matter is, they need you more in a way than you need them, because they need your vote. They need your support. They need your activism. And so I want to make the case that nuclear weapons are not sort of for the history books. They are something for you to be carrying in today and telling that member of Congress that this is part of what I need you to be doing for me in Congress today.
Anthony Weyer, thank you so much for coming in and speaking with us. I appreciate you taking the time, sir.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And thanks so much for hosting me out in the beautiful city of Bloomington. I've had a great time.